Today on our show, don't wear your wolf hat in the woods, but do serve the kitty some beer when the Gophers are playing. Fargo Season 3 pivots into its home stretch, and we're talking about Season 3, Episode 8, Who Rules the Land of Denial? Stay tuned.
You're tuning into the destination for TV superfan discussion, AfterBuzz TV. And now, let the buzz begin!
Yeah.
Hey!
Good, it's a party.
Woo!
And welcome back to ABTV Fargo, the only place you can go if you want to see Dave Child and Tara Erickson do that dance to that specific piece of music while those lights flash on their faces. I am Lex Michael. I am all over social media at the Lex Michael. And as always, I am joined by...
Oh, I'm Dave Child. You can find me at MrDaveChild or DaveChild.com. Ooh, I can't wait to talk about this app.
Oh, I'm Tara Erickson. You guys can find me on YouTube.com/Tara Erickson or Twitter at @TaraErickson and Instagram at Tara Erickson. Okay, cool.
Oh, boy, yikes. All right, so guys, if you are joining us live in the chat, hello. Please keep up with the conversation. Chime in. We love having you here with us. If you are not watching us live, you can join the conversation by going on to Twitter and using the hashtag ABTVFargo. Also, this show is available wherever you can find podcasts, but please go onto iTunes, like, subscribe, rate us 5 stars, let our producers know that you think we're doing a good job, give us a little pat on the back, we love you for it. Also, as has been well documented, I need those 5-star reviews
to live.
Yeah. It's a very rare condition, still trying to pin down a name. I hope they name it after me. Now, Season 3, Episode 8. We are, as I alluded to in our little cold open, we are now hard pivoting into our home stretch. We've got 2 episodes left after the one we're going to talk about today. And it did feel to me like we're doing a lot of rotating of our pieces to get everybody where we need to be for the final 2 episodes. But as always, right up top, general thoughts from both of you on this episode.
Oh, this was a good one. This was nice, weird... People tweeting at us, like, before we even got to see it, because we have to watch it basically when... I tend to watch it as soon as it goes online, because I don't have a normal TV like normal people. So, I had to see it late night, but people were already tweeting at me, just being kind of like, this is a weird one.
Well, a couple people, including, I think, like as recently as today, maybe this morning or late last night, I think Ryan Witalison on Twitter specifically phrased the question thusly, wanted to ask us if we felt that we finally got the supernatural moment that we've been waiting for all season.
Right.
Yes?
I mean, I would say if it gets
weirder,
if it gets weirder or more supernatural than this, then they're overdoing it. They're like, it's going past their UFO moment. Because it feels like this is around the time the UFO kind of happened, was towards the penultimate ending, or...
I want to say in season 2, it was the big shootout at the motel, right? So that would be second to last. That would be the penultimate episode.
Yeah,
and so this is like the third. This is the penultimate to the penultimate.
I think anti-penultimate is the term, I believe.
Yeah, ooh, that's very smart. Anti-penultimate episode. And I think, it's also... I think the showering of the frogs and stuff and the fish from the first one is kind of happened along the same element. So there could be more, but I feel like this was enough just to have this Twin Peaks crossover that we kind of ended up happening.
It felt very busy.
It was great. I kind of loved it. It brings up questions. It makes you kind of wonder what's going on. Mm-hmm. But I think we'll touch upon that later.
Quite a bit.
Yeah. All I have to say is that the bow and arrow and the axe and that whole scene made my entire life. That's it. That was my most favorite part of all of the episodes.
On that note, we're going to call it. Good night, everybody. we open with a continuation of our sequence from last week's episode where you've got now Nikki and Mr. Wrench teaming up to escape from Yuri and Mimo and undercover DJ Qualls.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, this is like... I kind of wish it was a bit more of a nod to O Brother, Where Art Thou?
When they're running with the chain
I guess it is kind of O Brother, Where Art Thou, just because your prisoner's running with a chain. But I kind of wish there was some like, oh, death, oh, or something happening as they're running. But it was great. I was glad to see Wrench. I mean, they set him up. And this is our only character we've seen every single season. So there was a chance that maybe they could just not do anything with him. And I was also glad to see that Wrench was on the side of the angels, on the side of, like, or at least helping Nikki out. Because I was a little worried. I think we talked last week about they were going to show up and maybe
go out on the other side, be together.
Yeah, help out Wrench or something. So,
well, I think it's fitting that you refer to it as being on the side of the angels, right? Because I feel like this is something that we get less a wink and more an aggressive head shake in the direction of a little bit later.
Yeah.
But this whole sequence was incredibly harrowing. We finally got all of the blood in the snow that Yuri was talking about when he was longing for Siberia.
Sure did. Oh, man.
Yeah. This was all... I think this episode could have been titled Blood in the Snow.
Sure.
Because I think it was all about the blood in the
and
snow.
And ear.
Ear to the ground, baby.
So we get before we get this incredibly violent encounter, we see Nikki and Mr. Wrench trying to communicate as they're running through the woods. Nikki discovers, of course, he's deaf, to her great frustration. Mm-hmm. But you hear these auditory flashbacks to the last, let's say, handful of days of Nikki's life, and you see like little things like the jacket that Wrench is wearing strikes her as looking incredibly similar to the jacket that Ray would consistently wear.
It's also the jacket that she kind of gave him, right, to go and do bridge. It was kind of a lot like that fringy jacket.
Yes.
Yeah.
So you see she's in the headspace I think you would expect now somebody in her position to be in. And it's like she has to keep moving, but I like that this cumulative effect is starting to seemingly take a toll on her psyche.
Yeah.
Because I think it just means that obviously we've been struggling with, like, does she really, really care? Or is it just all about her and she's egotistical and, like, narcissistic? But I'm like, no. I think it just says more to her caring about Ray and their relationship. And it's going to hit her hard in a lot of different ways that maybe we wouldn't expect for a Nikki Swango. But she's thinking about that very last moment and being like, wow, that was the deciding moment. Like, I asked to go with him.
Right.
So I think that she also feels guilty.
I think in a previous episode, I think we might have talked about how the way she sees Ray is basically like seeing a kitten.
I think we said puppy, but same general principle.
So I think we kind of predicted what was going to happen to Ray.
Kind of slayed that.
I think we're kind of on top of it.
Not to get too far ahead of ourselves, but quite possibly the cutest small animal in television history.
It's up there.
And we get like little close-ups, and it's just like I'm sitting there melting on my couch.
Its eyes,
And I feel like I'm not that guy usually, but I was just a mess.
You became that guy.
I was just a mess over how adorable that kitten was. But more on the kitten in a few minutes. We see that now, as Nikki and Mr. Wrench are trying to escape through the woods, that obviously Yuri, Mimo, DJ Qualls, who never really got a name. So he's just...
It's Golem.
He does have a name.
G-O-L-E-M.
It's Golem. It's Golem.
Okay, where was this?
Which is... It's only in the credits.
Okay.
It's only in the credits, and you can see it on IMDb.
Yeah.
What's interesting is in the IMDb of the previous episode where he shows up, he's just Syringe Cop. And in this episode where he gets killed, he's Golem. Which is odd, because it's an odd choice to choose, and I'm not sure why, except it's a term that's given to directly. It's given to like the Jewish mythical figure,
yes,
of which is a clay brought to life and animated by usually a rabbi,
essentially to serve a purpose.
Yeah, to serve a purpose. And usually it's one of those, it's a mindless creature. It's also given to someone who's unable to talk most of the time and is created.
DJ Qualls, did he have any lines in these episodes?
He did in the previous episode.
That he talks to her when he has her turn around and cuffs her to the door.
But not in this one. Yeah. But what's interesting is that he's brought to life with a word that it's usually transcribed on his body. So it's usually transcribed on a golem's forehead. Or something. Usually it's like truth, and then in order to kill it, you have to kind of wipe it away or turn it into death.
Okay.
Just write death, and then it just goes back to sleep. And it's usually just a big clay monster, kind of a Frankenstein sort of creature that doesn't have any kind of thoughts or feelings. Now, this golem did have a word transcribed onto him, which is Helga, which is interesting. But he's also fighting with Yuri. So he's not like So why? Who why was he would he a golem fight him for?
If Helga was?
Yeah,
because and, he. Yeah, that.
And usually, a golem. The most famous ideas of the golems are working for rabbis and kind of working for people of God. And he is definitely not working for people of God.
No.
So he is. It's a strange choice to call him golem. Like I'm curious about why. Maybe you guys have thoughts about maybe why he was called golem when he's. Like, because he's on the sides of the devil.
Well, my next big question would then be, what do the Jewish myths of golems have to say about taking their heads off?
Well, you have to wipe away the word.
Right.
In order to bring them back. And now his word is on his wrist, but I think taking his head off
would probably do it. So we get the sequence where as they come upon this clearing, Wrench and Nikki, and they find this dummy with a bunch of arrows in it, which is terrifying, and an axe. And
also terrifying because at first I thought maybe it was what happened to those hunters that they found.
Yes.
I thought because you just saw a hanging...
And there was that crazy, that moment where for half a second it's like, oh, did we just unceremoniously off... Yuri, where the hunters mistake his wolf hat for an actual wolf, and they put an arrow through it. And then, of course, we see Yuri approach them from behind, and the next thing we see, Yuri's got a crossbow, and we don't know what happened to this. It looked like a father and son, so they're dead now.
My imagination did the trick.
They're dearly departed.
And they almost got Yuri. What if that's what took Yuri out?
Right.
It was like just the father and son being like, I found a wolf!
Yep.
Yeah.
I found a wolf I shot in
the head. Like his disguise, which is designed to terrify others, is what ultimately it turns him into a giant target of sorts.
Right.
But of course, Yuri's a little more wily than that, and he takes the crossbow and goes after Wrench and Nikki as well. As Wrench is trying to smash this chain apart with an axe, he gets hit with an arrow. DJ Qualls comes in. There's a whole kerfuffle, and then bless them, teamwork, and they take that chain and they just
work together.
Decapitation.
Cut his head right off.
All it so takes. Good. Now we know what the D in DJ Qualls means. It means decapitation.
No,
thank you.
No points.
Thank you. No Everybody points. Loves me.
Oh, but I said the word first.
No,
okay.
No points awarded to anybody.
So we also should talk about what happens before they go into the woods, because there is that moment of where they're all wearing the masks.
Yes.
And I also think it's interesting what type of masks they're wearing, because you have Yuri with the wolf head on, and you also have DJ with Golem with the pig head.
And then Mima's got that goat head on.
Yeah.
Goat head. So they're all storybook figures. They're all like animals that you would find in like a Grimm's fairy tales or something like that. So I think that leads to the whole narrative story side of it. Also, as they're coming out of the bus after the escape happens, you also see that couple drive by and see them, and they have those eye contact, and they keep driving, and that's like straight out of the Fargo movie.
Yes.
That's like seeing the crash happen, have the couple kind of see it, and then later they get, you know, run off the road and then killed, and then later when Gloria finds them, that's straight out of Fargo. That was like, it was a nice nod to the original movie.
Yes, very much so.
Yeah.
So... And they decapitate poor DJ Qualls. We hardly knew ye. And then we get this moment where the arrows are flying out from wherever they're flying out from, and Mr. Wrench, with the axe, just flings it through the trees. And we don't know what happened, but we hear a sound as if it hit somebody.
Mm-hmm.
Come to find a little bit later, very, very shortly thereafter, that we severed Yuri's ear.
He done been Van Gogh'd.
Yeah, so like Yuri's now wandering around. It's been a rough day for Yuri Gurka.
Sure has.
All things. These things have not gone the way he intended them to.
I do not feel bad for him.
No, he's a big old jerk.
I do not.
So Wrench and Nikki continued their trek through the woods, and they come upon, of all things, a bowling alley.
Mm-hmm.
And immediately I start going like, just making little face scratchy sounds.
Yeah.
Interesting. And they go in, and Wrench sits himself down. Nikki goes up to the bar. And looking around the interior of the bowling alley, is it just that all bowling alleys look distressingly similar?
I think it is, because I did, when I was like getting excited to talk about this episode, I did post the tweet with that from the Big Lebowski. it with a GIF, and I did see that the Big Lebowski bowling alley does not look exactly the same.
Okay.
So if that's where you're going...
So, no, it's just that they look similar.
But what is cool about the design of this bowling alley, if you notice, every single bowling ball, especially the bowling balls, but in the whole design, they all match Nikki's coat.
Interesting.
Every single shade, and they're just, they're odd colors, too, because it's like brown...
Yeah,
purple,
it was like beige and maroon.
But every, and like orange, but yeah, kind of like, and those are all the bowling balls fit that color range. So she matched perfectly when she went into that bowling alley.
Interesting.
She like blended in perfectly and it almost seemed like she was meant to be there.
Right. So even though, okay, as we've established, this is clearly not the exact same bowling alley as seen in The Big Lebowski, I do think, obviously, the design of the place was meant to evoke it. We get the stars, those neon stars on the outside of the building.
Yeah.
I assume that this is all, like, you know, like a nudge towards the aesthetic of that bowling alley, if not the same location. But what is absolutely meant to evoke The Big Lebowski is Nikki sitting at the bar and this pan over, much in the same way that we reveal Sam Elliott's Stranger character in Big Lebowski, we reveal the return of Ray Wise.
Yeah. Who's playing his character's name is... Oh, I had it right in front. Paul Moraine.
Yes.
Yes, which is... interesting, and when he starts to talk, he doesn't sound like he's of this world.
No, he starts talking about, he starts like spouting off like deep philosophy immediately. Mm-hmm. We were talking about before we got into the studio to record how, we were talking about how much it felt like Twin Peaks, which is now back on TV. This sequence very much from obviously the presence of Ray Wise,
yeah, to the very, Leland Palmer,
the weird dreamlike ethereal nature of the setting and the dialogue, the fact that much like the new episodes of Twin Peaks, they're having this conversation, but there is not much in the way of background music at all. There's just a bit of a tone in the background. So it felt for a second, with if Mary Elizabeth Winstead was not in the scene, I would have had to do a double take and check
that I was watching the right show.
Right.
Am
I,
yeah. Right. But so...
it felt like this was maybe the White Lodge, because we haven't seen the White Lodge. So I thought maybe the White Lodge was... if, for Twin Peaks fans, they'll know what that means. But, yeah.
So he's talking about all the days are long. He's talking about the nature of existence. And then he says, oh, I've got something for you. And he produces this tiniest, most adorable little kitten that I've ever seen. And for a second, I was like, this show likes to hurt my feelings. Is something bad going to happen to this kitten?
Kitty.
So that Ghost Ray Wise can make some type of point. Thankfully, it did not. Kitten gets to be cute the entire scene. Spoilers, nothing bad happens to the kitten. Thankfully.
There were no sacrifices made via feline.
But the he talks about...
DJ Qualls gets his head cut off, but the cat is fine.
The cat stays.
He's talking about the this concept that I think has a connection to Kabbalah, right? And it's this concept of Gilgul, where an old soul is reincarnated into a new body. And to that point, he says that he named this cat Ray.
Ray. Basically saying, hey, this is your boyfriend.
Yeah.
Look at this cute cat who's your boyfriend.
And this whole scene, you get the impression, right, like, Dave, you just compared it to, like, the White Lodge on Twin Peaks. And if you're familiar with Twin Peaks mythology, the lodges, or at least the rooms that we see in this supernatural realm, seem to be almost like a stopgap or a waiting room of sorts.
Yeah.
And this felt like, based on the conversation that Ray Wise was having with Mary Elizabeth Winstead, it seems very much like this bowling alley, which isn't really a bowling alley. She saw a bowling alley for whatever reason.
Well, and so did, and you got the sense that so did Yuri later on.
It's still
on.
The same,
so it is like that he doesn't see a bowling alley, but she sees a bowling alley, is what he implied, because she has that, why are you in a bowling alley? And then he says, is that what you see?
Right.
So that's why we get that
It's like
sense.
Purgatory.
Yeah, so it is. There is a question of, like, who Ray Wise is in this. Now, there's a couple of theories that we can go along. It's a lot like how the way Sam Elliott in Big Lebowski kind of seems like he's God. Like, he's this omnipresent narrator, and now he finally talks to the dude.
Yeah.
And they have, like, a conversation, and it feels like he's almost talking to God. And because it's shot almost exactly like that Big Lebowski scene, and almost feels like he's God or a religious figure. But a lot of people are already mentioning this in the chat, is that he could be a mythical figure called the Wandering Jew, which is kind of an immortal person who kind of wanders the earth for several reasons. There's some, the origin of the Wandering Jew ranges from Christianity based to other reasons as well, but it is an immortal figure who's tied in with the Jewish faith, who's always there, and he seems to be like constantly talking about his Jewish faith in this scene.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which is odd coming from Ray Wise, because to me he just seems so waspy. But like, maybe it's just because of Twin Peaks, but I just always see him as like a hardcore wasp.
Sure.
But maybe I'm wrong. But he's the stuff that he says is very spiritual, tied in with the rabbi linking souls to a specific place.
Yes.
Especially souls that a place that is filled with a lot of death. And being a rabbi, connecting their souls to that death in order to free the rest of the souls, like the rabbi souls. That's why he tells a story about a rabbi who does that after the Bolsheviks had a mass grave in Russia, which is kind of important to what happens later.
Yes. Mm-hmm. We get a lot that suggests very strongly that this bowling alley, or whatever it actually is when it isn't a bowling alley, is a bit of a, like a limbo type place where you pass through on your way to whatever version of heaven and or hell that this mythology subscribes to. And that's where we get this line where Ray Wise, Paul, acknowledges Mr. Wrench, and they basically say, you know, like, well, we didn't really know where he was going to end up either. I had some reservations about this guy, but it seems like he's turned around and he's on a better path now.
Yeah.
Which is nice to hear. Like, good for Mr. Wrench.
Yeah, good for Mr. Wrench. We also have people in the chat. One person says Kaiser Wilhelm II, who I think I saw in this room, in this chat room, like an hour before we started. So good on you for keeping a conversation way before we started. But he said that Ray Wise is basically the anti-Malvo, which is an interesting way of looking at him. Because Malvo was such like a destructive force and almost like the devil. Now we have this godlike character who's kind of being benevolent and helping people in this season.
I want to watch them box each other.
Yeah, I want to see them meet. It's kind of like, and just have this, we are manly men, like, look to each other. It'd be great.
So, Ray Wise's character, Paul, and maybe he's God, maybe he's an emissary of God. It is unclear, but he clearly has some influence, some otherworldly influence upon our reality. Says to Nikki that there is a car outside you guys can take and go.
I also love how he says, ironically, it's a green VW bus, but its sins have been wiped clean, which is in reference to the Volkswagens being involved with the Nazis, and a lot of people of Jewish faith are banned for Volkswagens and never really want to use them because they've been tied to the Nazi party. So that's why he mentions that the sins have been wiped clean.
Yes,
for
yeah.
People who don't know.
Yes, and so off Nikki and Wrench go, but not before this final moment. And again, we keep talking about these moments that do key us into what Nikki's true feelings for Ray were. This idea that maybe this little cat is Ray reincarnated. And so Paul tells her, I'm going to help you out, but in exchange, when the time comes, there's a message for the wicked that you need to impart. So he gives her the message, and she says, okay, but my condition is, next time the Gophers are on, pour him a little bit of beer and he'll like it, which is so like heartbreakingly sweet.
Yeah.
And I'm already like on emotional pins and needles because this kitten is so dang adorable. And that line, I swear, I'm just sitting there and I'm going like, oh God, it's going to happen.
All right.
Poor Ray. Yeah.
And we should note also, keep in mind that Ray Wise's character, someone was brought up on the chat that he did appear in episode 3.
He did.
In Hollywood. And talking to Gloria.
And the plane.
Yeah, and the plane.
Yeah,
and
twice.
He seems to be there to kind of help guide people in the story who are kind of on a lighter shade of gray, at least. Because Nikki's not perfect. Let's don't pretend that Nikki's perfect.
For sure. No, I'm right now, separate and apart from watching Fargo and the number of other shows that I'm watching, I'm most of the way through rewatching Battlestar Galactica, where the lightest of light spoilers, they introduced this in the pilot. There are essentially angel-like characters that show up to guide a couple of characters on the show. So my brain is already right in that like narrative sweet spot where I'm just so ready to accept that that's what's happening in a story.
Yeah.
So I didn't even think that much. I was just like, oh yeah, okay, so he's a spirit of some kind. Great. It's going to help him out.
Yeah.
Why not?
Yeah, and they seem to be helping. Yeah, they seem to be guiding people.
Now, the flip side of that coin is after Wrench and Nikki depart in this car, Yuri stumbles across, now Sans one ear, Yuri stumbles across this bowling alley as well, and he shows up and he asks the bartender for napkins and vodka, and Raywise is still at the bar, and he knows that his name is Yuri Gurkha, and he says that he has a message from Helga Albrecht, and...
Yeah, and keep in mind that Helga is the girlfriend that's also... Her name is written on the golem, but also... in the very first episode.
That weird prologue where they're looking for Yuri Gurkha, who's committed a murder, and they're going to pin it on this guy who insists he isn't Yuri Gurkha.
Right.
The victim was Helga Albrecht.
Yeah. So Helga needs some redemption and is some of the first blood to be spilt amongst all these Bolsheviks kind of murders. That's, you know, I'm saying that as like, because that's kind of what Yuri is. He's even referred to as like the son of the wolves of the... He has a very descriptive way that Raywise like describes him.
He's like a Cossack, but the, Cossack, the head of the... Yeah.
Mother Cossack. Of dragons, breaker of chains.
Yeah.
So, yes, Paul has a message for him from Helga Albrecht and Rabbi Nachman, and Yuri has no idea how you know about this, how do you know who I am, and he basically looks directly into the camera, and we get what I guess is now his POV, and we see... What I have to assume are the ghosts of his many victims staring him directly in the face. Mm-hmm. And that's the last we see of Yuri in this episode.
It could be the ghosts of his many victims and the ghost of the Cossack's many victims, too.
Yes.
So it could be kind of both because he's kind of aligned himself with the Cossacks, which is kind of... That's like old school anti-Semitism. So it's kind of... It's like, let's take it back further than... Is it further than the Nazis? I think it is further than the Nazis. Or is it? I don't know my history. But it's kind of like an anti-Semitism we don't really tend to talk about.
Yes.
I think we tend to go right towards Nazis.
It's the even less sexy anti-Semitism.
Also, someone brings up because, and I want to mention this now because this is the last we see of Yuri, suspiciously, of the episode. But I saw this brought up on Reddit as well, and Wally Russ has brought this up in our chat, that also the one ear being cut off might be a reference to the soldier St. Peter, the soldier that St. Peter cut the ear off of and then Jesus later healed. So that's another spiritual connection, and one thing that might be interesting, someone I think in Reddit brought this up too, that if he comes back later in a later episode... And he has his ear healed. That might be a direct reference to that sort of...
So he might be evil Jesus.
Or he might be purged, and he might be on a path of redemption himself. So there, no one's beyond redemption, and if he's maybe on the path of redemption...
Also, if he doesn't have an ear, he does talk about how Helga talks his ear off.
Talks his ear
off. So now he won't really have to listen to it. It might make him not such a jerk.
Nice burn, Helga, from the grave.
Woosha.
But it is an interesting thing to speculate about, and we can speculate a little bit further at the end of the episode when we jump into predictions, but we do get, pretty shortly after the next bit that we're going to talk about, we get a time jump.
Yeah.
And during this interim period that we're skipping over, apparently Yuri has not returned or been seen. So if you are Varga, I think the very last thing you would want is Yuri, of all people, heading down a path of redemption and possibly coming back on you. Your party would be a little more awkward, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For sure.
Also, by the way, in the chat, Samurai of the Dark, cool name, Samurai of the Dark, brought up that Helga means holy or blessed. So that's another thing to kind of keep in mind. If that's like the holy written script on the golem.
Right.
And also, you know, that's who he destroyed later. Yes. Okay.
So... As you mentioned, Gloria is dealing with...
Sorry, one more thing, because this chat is killing it right
Let's
now.
Let's do it.
Sluice Friggins, another cool name. It's
a fantastic
says,
name.
And the guy who de-eared him is deaf. Irony.
Yes.
Which I kind of like, too.
That's really good.
And also a lot of people
More
think,
ironic than the VW is what he said.
Yeah. And,
good calls.
A lot of people think that he is beyond redemption after Varga has already recruited him. So that's a good point, too.
That's the thing. It's like there are characters in fiction who do terrible things, but you can redeem. The one I always point to immediately, like right off the top of my head, is like Spike on Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Right.
One of the greatest redemptive arcs on television, for my money. And he's done some truly horrible things. Yuri, I think, is as depicted so far as a type of evil that I don't know is necessarily redeemable. We haven't seen anything but that blackness.
That's
from
very
that character.
True. Yeah. Well, Nikki is kind of not a great person, but is also redeemable.
We've consistently been shown her humanity.
Yes.
Like the worst thing you could say about her is that she's manipulative and she is
and
a criminal
she
and
murdered
she's
Maurice.
She totally murdered the dude with the air conditioner.
But that guy was also a terrible human being.
So
yeah, kind of evens out.
But point being, right, we've seen consistently humanity throughout from Nikki, despite her transgressions. We have not seen any such humanity from Yuri. We've just seen this pitch black.
I feel like Yuri doesn't get a chance for anyone to be like, let's show us your humanity. You are like a workhorse person that I hired to go murder people.
Right.
And I don't think anyone would ever think anything other than that. So it's like, that would be kind of a cool side story if that were to ever approach him to be like, let's see this other side of Yuri. Might be kind of interesting, but I kind of like him as the bad guy.
Sitcom, 4-camera sitcom.
There's no room for any redemption, but I'm saying, yeah, let's give Yuri an apartment in New York. And
got
let's
wacky
see,
neighbors.
Yeah, let him have a girlfriend.
At the end of every episode, he kills him with
for
a whip.
For 2 weeks, and then he'll lose his mind and murder everyone.
Oh, yikes.
It'll be great.
So we get a brief check-in with Gloria as she's driving past. She talks to the people who are handling the bus crash scene, and they give her no small amount of guff. And then we jump over to...
They are better than Mo, though.
They're at least somewhat professional about
it. Yeah, they at least give her the information that she needs to know, and they treat her like another cop.
Yes.
She's not a U.S. Marshal.
Right, it does feel like, specifically the Marshal gives that line. It's like, are you a U.S. Marshal?
I thought that was such a jerk move, though.
It is.
He didn't need to...
It absolutely is, but at least, if you're going to be a jerk, at least be a jerk based on your rank and not about the gender of the person you're talking to.
I agree.
Like, it's a small step up, it's a little gross, but like the tiniest bit of credit where credit's due.
Yeah.
So we check in with her briefly, but then we jump over to Emmett's house, and of course Vargas seems to have he seems to be living there basically when he's not in his trailer with his computers.
Right.
Mimo's also hanging out there. We get to see Mimo dance a lot this episode, which is pretty great.
He's moving and grooving, Mimo.
Pretty great. He's like an iPod ad. That guy.
He was. Apple Music Mimo.
Yeah.
So, Sai comes to the house, and Varga tells him that Emmett is upstairs sleeping, and Mimo and Varga are in the middle of eating. Varga says, I'm going to make you a plate of food, puts a plate of food in front of Sai.
And like, way too much food, too. He's being like, this is how normal people eat, right?
Gluttonous.
Yeah.
And then you purge. Just go ahead.
And he tells Sai that you're going to get this $5 million bonus. Congratulations. And Sai has no idea what's happening. He's very uncomfortable. He's like, we just got our bonuses. And Vargas is like, nah, it's another one. It's great. This is so awesome. Here, have some tea. This is my mother's recipe.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, why'd you drink that tea?
How do you not know, Sai?
Like, how do you not run? Like, how do you not just run out of that? Even if you assume if you run, somebody's going to shoot and kill you, at least you have a shot at not... Drinking the tea.
Also, best case scenario, that tea has touched his balls. Worst case scenario, you're getting poisoned.
You're gonna die.
Like, come on.
Yeah. So that is ultimately what happens. Sai comments on the tea being a little bit bitter, and drinks some more of it at Varga's urging.
It doesn't taste like balls, though. So that's something.
So that's
a new thing.
That's something. And. Ta-da! No ball taste. So
that scared me.
So Sai gets as far as the lobby of the Stussy building again before he vomits and he passes out.
Right.
And Sai falls into a coma where he remains for about 3 months.
Yeah, 3 months. Because everything that happens in this episode happens on Christmas Day.
Yes.
So they established that well with
and now,
Gloria and the presents and on all that stuff.
Yes, and now we're in March.
Yeah. And you see it on a whiteboard. Good job.
Very clearly.
Good job with the time progression. And you also see Sai's beard.
Yes.
Because he's been in a coma for 3 months.
Yes. And
Emmett
is at his bedside. And as he emerges from the room, Gloria and Winnie are still, they're there waiting for him. And I love the second he comes out, before they say anything, he's just like, no, and like tries to keep walking.
Right.
And they're hounding him, and they're talking about how bizarre it is. It seems almost like maybe he was poisoned. And they reference, like, that Russian guy, which is...
Oh, the poisoning of Alexander. I had it.
Litvinenko.
Litvinenko. Yeah.
Which is another pretty overt nod at
Russian
the
like,
antics of of you know Vladimir Putin.
Putin.
Okay, United States president.
Check those cuticles. Check those cuticles.
I don't want to get poisoned. I'm drinking a little beverage right here. I don't want to get no poison on this. they're giving him guff as they do. They're poking at him some more. And now, okay, it's been 3 months. And there are characters that we do not catch up with after this time jump in this episode. We don't know right now where Yuri is. We don't know where Nikki and Wrench went off to. We do know that someone is messing with Emmett.
Yep.
Real bad.
Someone's telltaling heart him bad. They're kind of like, he's hearing the heart underneath the floorboards with the Ray's car in place of his car.
Yes.
And then he goes back to the office and the stamps everywhere. That was great.
Ton of stamps.
Ton of stamps. And just a lot of stamps.
A lot of stampy.
He's melting down. And the I guess it's the receptionist runs in, or is his assistant, and is like, what's going on? And he starts yelling about the stamp pictures, which shows us conclusively that A, this is not a hallucination because she sees it as well.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And B, I love that she is now so used to Varga being a presence, and she knows him now well enough to know, like, oh, Mr. Varga just does things sometimes. Do you want me to call him? I'll call Mr. Varga for you, and we can talk about it. And Emma's just like, no, don't call Mr.
No,
Varga.
No, no. Yeah. No,
just in case it is him for some reason. But it doesn't seem like it is him, because Emmett gives him a call and complains about it.
Yes.
Right? And says, and Varga seems to be brushing it off and not thinking it's actually a threat at all. Even though it definitely is.
Well, something's up.
Something's like going after him.
And if it's not Varga messing with Emmett, then you'd think Varga would be a little bit more concerned.
Right.
I agree.
Yeah, because someone is like, do you think it is Varga messing with Emmett? Is that what you're saying?
Well, I'm not sure, because think about how...
I kind of felt like it was, only because those stamps are a constant reminder of what Emmett did to Ray, and that also helps Varga in this situation of, like, I cleaned up your mess. You killed your brother, and I helped you and cleaned it up. It's just, like, be reminded of this whole stamp issue. It goes back to how you killed your brother, and I saved you.
Right.
I still don't know. That's just one reason where I'm like, Varga seems like he would do
that.
And
not for nothing, if Varga is now a full partner in this company, if you make Emmett, quote-unquote, disappear, that raises a lot of questions. And yeah, Varga could probably wiggle his way out of it, but that's a very complicated enterprise. Especially, you've dealt with Psy, effectively, and nobody's looking at Varga about that. If you make Emmett go away, then people are looking, and you don't want people to
look.
That's
true.
But if you drive Emmett so crazy that he has to be, say, institutionalized, that he maybe kills himself, suddenly that partner's gone, and that whole company, all that money, that entire enterprise is suddenly Varga's.
Right.
But it seems so clear that what's the first thing that's going to happen before he gets driven mad or kills himself or something is he's gonna confess to the crime.
Which he ultimately does, which is why, again, I start to go...
I don't think it was him.
You'd think Varga would have thought that far ahead.
Yeah,
I would
agree.
I don't
think it was Varga.
Right.
I think it was someone else.
But then, before we even get to that moment, after the car, after the stamps in the picture frames all over the office, somebody had to get into Emmett's house, presumably past Mimo, while Emmett was asleep, to put a fake mustache on him.
That was the thing that threw me. I was like, I don't know if it's Varga.
But who else? My question was, who else could have gotten past
Mimo
or whoever else, or Varga himself, or who else might have been stationed there?
I have a theory, but we could save it for a prediction.
We're so close, so let's hold it for 1 minute. So let's see. Emmett might be crazy, and then one of the last scenes in the episode after Emmett rips most of this mustache off of his face,
right,
is a scene between him and Varga where Varga tells him the story of Hiro Onoda, who is the Japanese soldier who refused to surrender years after World War II and was hiding in the Philippines mountains. And I wanted to ask you guys what you took from this story, because especially when you brought up the Wandering Jew myth.
Yeah.
And I didn't think about it while I was watching this episode, but once you brought that up, my brain started drawing connections between that myth and the idea of these post-World War II Japanese stragglers.
Right.
These people who are in their own right wanderers of a sort. So I was trying to figure out what do you guys think might be the thematic through line here?
Well, I feel like the biggest line with it was that he was the last man to die for an ideal. So it's like, who's going to be the person that dies in the most extravagant way for a really strong ideal in this? And I'm like, I don't have a clear grasp of who that would be just yet.
I mean,
I'm not sure.
I read it as Varga was bringing it up to be kind of like, get over it, dude. Don't die on a hill for like your dead brother. That's in the past. We're not talking about the past anymore.
Like, move on.
Move on. We're having, which is why I don't think it was Varga driving him insane. Because I think Varga really, if anything, he would just like a complacent, just do as I say, keep being around as the head of this person. He doesn't want someone to go insane and gain a conscience. And that's kind of what's happening with this. And he's saying, don't be this lost wanderer who's still fighting for a cause that's long over. The war's lost.
Mm-hmm.
You have, I think he says, you've won.
You won life.
Yeah, you won life.
You've won life.
So weird.
But in reality, I think he's saying you lost. I mean, you have lost, and you're wandering in the woods, and you think you're fighting for this ideal that's already been beaten. The emperor's, you know, already surrendered. Your brother is dead. So come back, come over to my side, play happy, play good. And don't be the lost wanderer in the woods, because that's how you're going to end up dying. You're going to be this lost wanderer. So I think that's what he's saying, but I could be wrong.
And one of the last things that happens is Varga offers Emmett some sedatives. Now, I don't think that he was actually... I don't think he'd be poisoning Emmett in this scene. I think it was literally just shut up, dude. Go sleep this off, and we'll talk about it tomorrow.
Yeah.
Emmett, in maybe the least naive move by far that he's made the entire season, actually, apparently successfully, fakes out Varga and Mimo, fakes taking the pills. Mimo throws him on his bed, leaves him there, takes off his shoes, and I guess pieces. Emmett was able to, I guess, leave fairly easily without being detected, so maybe that does explain how somebody got in and put the mustache on him.
Yeah, because there's only two people. They don't have, like, armed guards around. There is just, like, two people kind of guarding the place. They're powerful enough that if something goes wrong, they're on top of it. But
yeah. Also, I don't think it was the first time they gave him that sedative, because when Sai came over, it was like, oh, he's asleep. He may took a pill, two, maybe three.
Yeah.
He's just please leave type deal. Where I'm like, I feel like once he gave him those red pills, the reason he was like, I'm not going to take these because they've done this to me for the past however many days.
Yes.
Right.
I feel like it wasn't the first time.
They're just keeping him sedated.
Exactly.
Yeah. So he's not going nuts.
By the way, before we get any further, I do want to say Wally Russ has a great point, and I'm about to sneeze. Maybe I won't. But he says the last Imperial soldier is totally Gloria.
It cuts Bless from you. The story to Gloria surrounded by computers. Bless you.
Thank you. Thank you for helping me complete that thought.
You are so welcome, Mr. Dave Child.
And that's a good point, is that she is, like, still fighting. She hasn't given up to computers yet. She hasn't given up to technology. So she is also a wanderer in that way, where she's not given up her cause. So, anyways, let's continue, because she comes into the story
next. One decisive move that Gloria does make in this episode, a very Gloria-light episode overall, but one decisive move she does make is she finally signs the divorce papers.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I was trying to figure, those were divorce papers.
For dissolution of marriage, I saw, like, printed on them.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah.
I almost, like, was wondering if that was, because it happened so fast and I didn't get a chance to go back, but I almost wondered if that was dissolution of the case or something.
No, it was...
No, because it has his last name on there.
Okay, good.
So her soon-to-be ex-husband had already signed, and I guess it had taken her a little bit longer to finally make the decision.
That's interesting that as soon as the decisive move happens...
Walks Emmett.
Yeah, get a decisive move from Emmett.
Who arrives at the police station to confess.
Yeah.
And on that, we go to credits.
I feel like Gloria rules the land of denial in this, because she's no longer denying that. It was like in the envelope, she was going to drop it off and not send it back signed, to be like, I'm denying this. I don't. This isn't happening. And then something happened where she just was like, you know what? Screw it. And just signed it and was like, boom. No longer in denial. And then I think right after that, she was like, you can't call me chief anymore. I'm just like
deputy,
you.
Just
she
like you.
Walks out and then boom.
Yeah. She knows exactly where she stands and fits now and is like accepting it.
So she no longer rules the land of denial. She's past it.
Yeah, I mean, she's past it. I'm saying she's like overcome it, where it's like you've overcome it because you've actually been like, I was in denial and I'm accepting, like, I'm not dealing with that anymore.
Well, and this is something we've been talking about with Gloria all season, the fact that she's existing as this collection of contradictions with one foot on both sides of it. Yeah. And now it does seem exactly like what you're saying, like she's finally settled on one, maybe settled's a bad word, but she's finally come down decisively on either side, depending on what it is. And like, yeah, now things are actually happening. Things are moving forward in a way that they couldn't before because she did exist as a collection of those contradictions.
And also, Emmett's making a decision, too, that's getting rid of his denial
as
that
well.
That he was, like, constantly in.
Yeah.
But if anyone's ruling the land of denial, it's Varga, because that's how he rules in general. He loves denial. He loves, like, having all these people. That's a great point, because I couldn't get... When I was trying to think of the point of the name of this episode, I couldn't get past the dad joke of it's just a river in Egypt. Like, he's just like, and because there's a lot of like, there's a lot of people talking about how the Jews are being oppressed and all that stuff, and I was like, well, they were also oppressed in Egypt too. So is that what they're going with this?
Oh, God,
I thought it was maybe another one of those, but no, that's a much better point.
It turns out all the titles are dad jokes.
Yeah.
All dad
jokes.
That's
all secret dad. That'll be next season. It'll be like dad
secret
jokes.
Secret dad jokes.
Yeah.
Also, didn't you guys think it was really sad when Emmett was explaining, he said, Emmett, play with me. Like, Emmett, watch me. That he was thinking about his brother, his, like, little brother being like, I thought that was so sad. I was like,
he finally saw Ray as his little brother.
As his little brother, not like him taking over and taking advantage of him as this, like, awful older brother and him, you know, with these conflicting thoughts. He just went back to, like, the good times that he had with his brother, which I was like, that's so sad.
I think the least selfish version of Emmett we've ever seen.
Yeah.
And I think he's finally seeing how, like, he references them losing their father when they were younger, but then losing Ray, and then he just recently, his family just completely walked out on him as well. I think this sense of loss is finally catching up with him as well in a way that's forcing him to stop and go, oh, I had these things, and they're gone now.
Yeah. Right.
And it didn't have to be this way. It was heartbreaking. And so you can see, you can easily buy how now it's a dang shame it took this long, but why Emmett's now finally ready to go and confess his sins, as it were.
Yeah. Do we want to quickly go to predictions?
I think we want to, because you wanted to hit something.
Yeah, he had TV something. Predictions. I have no idea.
Well, I'm curious about, like, because the last time we saw Nikki was with Wrench. So, and we know Wrench is connected to the Fargo mob.
Yes.
So what might end up happening, and I'm curious about this, is if she somehow gains forces with Wrench and the Fargo mob, and now she might actually have the manpower after these 3 months to actually go after Ray. Because I think if anyone's putting those pictures up and is trying to mess with, I'm sorry, Emmett. If anyone's trying to mess with Emmett, I think it's going to be Nikki, and maybe her knowledge is helping the mob mess with Varga, because they probably want to take down Varga, because I doubt they're on the same page. I bet they're competing forces. So that's my prediction, and I think it's going to get... It looks like the next week on... I saw very late last night, but it seems like it's going to be kind of complicated, and I think that's why it's going
to
be complicated.
See, I don't see these next week ons that you see.
Me neither.
So I never know.
I always watch them, and you explain them to me
every week.
Yeah. I forget this one because it's one of those that they're like, they're not revealing much. They're just going like, boom, 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 and Donnie being like, you know, this case is complicated. And it's that sort of thing. Because now I think Gloria is going to be able to get the law on her side, like she was hoping from the beginning. So. We'll see.
I foresee that. I think Gloria's going to go a long way. I think she'll be more in the next episode. I hope so, only because now she knows fully where she stands. She's no longer the chief. She can just, like, fully do her job, but also not have to be the chief. Like, she can kind of be in the shadows a little bit more, not have to, like, run everything, and hopefully dig deep as she has been last week and not really playing chief, just kind of, like... I think we'll see a lot more of her next episode. I feel like a lot of things will break through. And also, I kind of want to see, does Pi and Nikki and Gloria ever happen? Because I feel like maybe it will. I feel. Remember how she's like, pie, how Nikki asked for pie, and that was the one time that Nikki would actually talked, and she's like, I like coconut with the sprinkles on it. And I'm like, Glory would remember that and be like, if there's any moment that I can get a moment with Nikki, she will have coconut pie because you Gloria know, is the best.
Every single
I want to see that happen.
Every single season of Fargo, Tenna ends with a dinner usually. Uh-huh. It usually ends with like people coming together and sitting down for their normal dinner and their lives returning.
Yeah.
So it would be interesting if it ends with like them eating pie
and Nikki gets some little chocolate flakes on there.
Yeah, that'd be cool. And also, don't forget the story of Peter and the wolf. Because right now we have the cat has just disappeared,
yep.
like in the initial story of Peter and the wolf. And now the bird, right? And that's Emmett, is coming to Peter, and that's who Peter uses to draw out the wolf in order to defeat the wolf, is the bird. And I believe Emmett is tied to the bird after the duck is swallowed by the wolf, which was Ray. So it seems like it's there.
That is more or less what happened.
I mean, yeah. And now, so what might happen now is in order to get Varga, they'll use Emmett as bait, is what I think is going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
According to the Peter and the Wolf story.
I like it. We'll see. Well, we're going to find out soon because there's only two more episodes this season. I'm incredibly excited. I think that is probably going to do it for this episode of ABE TV Fargo, unless either one of you have any final thoughts. If you want to put a nice little bow on top of our discussion, now's the time.
Coconut cream pie chocolate flicks.
Beautifully done. I feel great about that. And so we will see you guys next week to talk about the penultimate episode. But until then, my friends, where can people find you on the internet?
Guys, find me on YouTube.com/Tara Erickson, Twitter @TheTaraErickson, Instagram @TaraErickson. Boom, go.
Ooh, you can find me @MrDaveChild or DaveChild.com. My name is Dave Child.
And I am all over social media @TheLexMichael. We will see you guys next week. In the meantime, if you're going into the woods, leave your wolf hat at home. We will see you at some point soon. We love you.
Bye-bye.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
What we're saying is we want pie.
Just give us pie.
A lot of it.
We want
like
pie.
Seven
pies.
Oh, cherry, the blueberry.
Coconut.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.